Good, George. Can you let me know if you can hear me okay with like a thumbs up or anything like that?
Hello, just making sure everything's good on the other side. You guys can hear us? Which ear? Yeah, that's fair. It's not with any either, but oh I don't see that. Check 1, 2, check two.
Levels on, I see levels down there. You're good.
That's what make sure we could hear him too.
Well,
Yeah, so it's a remote present. So we're going to do. You see some on the other side. You're going to be spoken. Hi, this is Matt Falco. If you need us in Central C, we'll I'm just getting off the Central C. We should all be set up. He hasn't said anything, or she hasn't said anything.
Yeah, I'm here. I can hear you guys all right. Can you hear me okay?
Yep. Yes, we can hear us.
Yep, all good. I can hear you fine.
So for him to be able to hear you guys, it's going to have to be on the Gizmec or the mic. I can try and have it connected to this, but it's way better if you guys use the handheld because it's been kind of close. I just don't know how far right now we would test for that.
Okay,
So,
where somebody can walk up and talk.
yeah.
Hey, Chris, this is George Williams. There's only a handful of people here in the room, but I think you can start whenever you're ready.
Okie dokie. That's it.
They
It's
don't
fine.
have anybody here to officially introduce you or anything like that, so.
All good. Cool. I'll give it maybe one more minute and then I'll kick off.
Maybe you want to spin the camera around.
Yeah, I can spin the camera around so you can see who's in
That'd
the
be
room.
cool.
Turn it off. Turn it off.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then let me make the camera live. Don't know how to make this.
There's a
Ah,
lot
there
of
it is.
hit the camera thing again. Pop on the knob. There you go.
There's a few people still drifting in online, so I'll give them about another minute or so. This is the last session of the day for you fellas. First session of my Friday. Okay, we'll make a start in the interests of time. Tēnā tātou, I te tuatahi ngā mihi ki ngā tangata whenua o te rohe nui, ngā rātou te mana, ngā rātou te whenua, ngā rātou te tino rangatiratanga mō ake tonu, kātahi ka mihi ki a koutou hua huihu mai nei ki te kōrero, ki te whakarongo ki ahau, ki te kōrero i ngā take e pānga ki ngā hōtaka wairea, hōtaka tuwhera, me te wairua o ngā kaupapa. I won't do the entire talk in te reo Māori because I'm pretty sure I'd be the only one who understood it. But I will kick off now. I'll do a little intro of myself. My name is Chris Cormack. I am from Aotearoa, New Zealand. I was born in the far north and I live in the capital city, Wellington, and now. I've been doing computer stuff since about 97 for a job, and probably the most famous thing I've done was be one of the original developers on the Koha project way back in 1999, and still continued in on that project till now through multiple different companies. So I don't do much code anymore. I've been demoted into management, and so I mostly go to meetings for a job now. So for this talk today, I'm going to try and share some of my insights from the 25 plus years of working on Koha and working with the community. And I'm going to explore a little bit about how kind of accidentally Te Ao Māori values, Te Ao Māori is like the Māori worldview, created one of the most ex successful open source library communities. So in order to do that, this is not going to really work because there's hardly any of you in the room, and I can only see a few of you, but I'll ask the question anyway. How many of you have contributed to an open source project that eventually died? Well, if I ask this at a tech conference, normally it's pretty much everyone has done something, and the projects have started really well. We've all seen it, technically. The brilliant projects just die, empty GitHub repos, abandoned communities, broken promises. But we've also seen projects with imperfect code that somehow thrive for decades. And so, what's the difference? So, the paradox that I've observed over my 25 years of working on Koha and other open source projects, company I work for only does open source, so we've got all sorts of projects. GitHub is full of technically excellent code that nobody uses anymore. Meanwhile, plenty of projects with messy code bases, but still with strong communities, continue to grow. And the missing ingredient in these projects isn't technical. It's spiritual, for want of a better word. It's Wairua. It's essence. So, what is Wairua? So, Wairua. Māori is a really easy language. It's consistent, other than like English. The vowel sounds never change. R, E, I, or U. So, it's super easy to learn. So, you can all practice saying koha later and get the vowel sounds right for that. But this Wairua, for what kind of loosely translated in English, could be the spirit, the soul, the essence. So, in a kind of the conceptual, it's a fundamental Māori concept, and it's not just kind of about having a community. It's the foundation of how people relate to each other and to the work. And accidentally, this is kind of how koha grew, because this is one of the ways I grew up. So the project kind of just inherited some of this. So a little bit around koha for those of you who don't know. Koha was started in 1999 out of a Y2K issue. The library, Porowhenua Library, had a system that didn't understand four digits for dates, for years. So it was going to revert to 00 in the year 2000, which is not great for doing overdues and those kind of things. So they liked the software, but it was proprietary software, and the vendor had since gone out of business, and so there was actually no way we could fix it. So in about late August, early September of 1999, I blame Simon, the sysadmin that I used to work with. He blames me, but one of us said, library system's just a big database, how hard could it be? And that was the idea, to write a library system in September to go live on January 3rd. So we did. Because we didn't know we couldn't, and we were young enough to think we could do anything. So we created it in a small town in New Zealand. The name itself is deliberate. Koha is a Māori concept. It's the idea of, it transcends lots of cultures. When you visit people, you usually take a gift, or when someone does something for you, you take a gift. So it's that kind of reciprocal gift giving, that idea of giving something away because you're getting something back, which we thought it was a fantastic name for an open source project, because that's essentially how open source works. You contribute and you benefit from everyone else's contributions. So from that tiny beginners, three small libraries, Porowhenua libraries make up Foxton, Levin, Shannon, and Tokomaru, about a 30,000 people population base. Probably about between 5 to 15,000 regular-ish library users, so quite a tiny library in the scheme of things. But now, actually, I need to update the slide, because as of the last time I looked on here, we have about 20,000 libraries globally using Koha, across 100-plus countries, every continent except Antarctica. There are two libraries in Antarctica. If any of you have any contacts in Antarctica and can convince one of them to switch to Koha, there's Scott Base and McMurdo Sound, then we could legitimately say that Koha is on every continent on Earth, which would be cool. But the growth was kind of guided, coming from Aotearoa, with a te reo Māori name, with this kind of te ao Māori principles in the background. So, moving on a little bit. Talking kind of about the governance spectrum and the difference between, say, how Koha operates and maybe some other projects, is that not all, just these are my opinions as well. Not all open source projects are created equal. We need to be honest about where real power lies in a lot of these projects. A lot of open source projects are actually vendor controlled, or controlled by a board or a foundation. True community sovereignty is rare. And so this spectrum kind of helps us evaluate honestly where the power lies. You might have seen what's happening lately with the Ruby Gems community, where almost a little bit of a hostile takeover being done by the board, moving some of the maintainers out and stuff. So looking at where the power lies and who has the decision making can give you a good idea about the strength or the way a community works. So, in the kind of te ao Māori principles that we bring into koha, there's a three or four main ones, and I'll talk through those now. Or five, actually, five main ones. So we're going to kind of explore these next five Te Ao Māori values that help shape Kōhā's community. And these aren't just cultural concepts; they are practical frameworks that other projects can use as well to create measurably different outcomes for project sustainability and community sustainability. So the first one I want to talk about is whanaungatanga, kinship, connection, relationships. So the whanaung, if you translate whanaungatanga literally, it's the act of making family. But it's those building those strong connections, and kind of in a kind of a Western open source world, we often talk about contributors or users. In a kind of a Te Ao Māori way of looking at, we're family. We're an extended family connected through all sorts of connections. And this, the, if you think about that in your mind, it fundamentally shifts the way we treat each other. Some of the ways we maintain whanaungatanga in the Kōhā community is through things like the Hack Fest in Marseille and the Kōhā cons that we run that move around the world. Can't be in the same continent within 3 years, so it moves around the world. And the major part of those events is actually the face-to-face and the eating and drinking together and that kind of growing those bonds. It's much harder to be mean to someone when they're not just an email address, when they're a person that you've shared a pint with or eaten dinner with, and those kind of things. So it's really important, that face-to-face stuff. So one of the examples that I talk about in the Kōhā community, and I think it's really quite a beautiful one, is the first one is we had one of our developers, still very active in the community, Thomas Kainorazi, who works, he's in Argentina, works a little bit for Bywater, works for his own company as well. He had his laptop stolen. And within 48 hours, the community had fundraised, bought a laptop, and had it posted to him. And so he had a new laptop within 2 days of it having stolen. And that was kind of without any kind of central leadership, without any kind of formal governance structure, for want of a better word. It was just people knew it was the right thing to do, so we did it. Another example was in Australia, they had some really bad floods in the kind of Queensland, the east coast of Australia area, through Brisbane and stuff. And one of the libraries that was affected was a beautiful library, but often in libraries, you put your rare and precious books down in the climate controlled basement, which is not a great place to be when flooding occurs. But also some of their servers and stuff were down there. But so the community again rallied together, guided by Bob and Irma, who lived in Australia, managed to get them up and running again so that they could do an inventory stock and find out what they'd missed, lost, and find out where things were and help put their library back together. That was again a really beautiful thing to see, to be part of the community. We also do eight neat things where whenever we know of a baby being born in a community, Katrin Fischer, who is in Germany, often gets a onesie made for them and sent to them. So there's all these little, all babies, or some of them are quite big now, some of them are nearly teenagers, or some of them are teenagers, and both of mine are, have little onesies, Kōhā onesies around the world. And it's those kind of beyond the code, beyond the project, well, beyond the what you'd think of the scope of the project, that actual genuine care for each other makes it a very strong community to be in and a very good one to be part of. Another core concept in Te Ao Māori is a thing called manaakitanga. Mana is the kind of the intrinsic value and the self-worth, the belief, the prestige, the pride that people have in and of themselves. And the manaaki means to lift mana. So manaakitanga is the act of lifting other people's mana. We often say in Te Ao Māori that if I lift your mana, I'm lifting my own. So if, by helping you, by caring for you, by providing hospitality, I enrich my own life. And so manaakitanga is about that genuine hospitality and care for others. And so the way we play that in Koha is that I think we do a pretty good job of welcoming newcomers. We try to, if we've noticed that it's a first person's time to submit some code, we'll step them through the process of getting that accepted into Koha, and we'll be perhaps far less critical than we might be of someone who's been developing for a long time. Like, we'll give them the feedback, but we'll help them get their code to a point where we can accept it. We've gone are the days of the read the RTFM culture, that read the manual, just go look it up yourself. That doesn't work, not if you want to grow your community. So true manaakitanga requires us to welcome manuhiri or visitors with genuine care and patience, and invest in their success. And like I said, by doing so, we elevate ourselves. The more we show mana, or the more we care about those around us, the better we are, and the better we feel, and the better the community is. So inside the community, we have koha, and the documentation is translated into 50 plus languages to make it easier for people to join the community. We do patient mentoring, or we try and do our best to do patient mentoring. We all sometimes get busy, but we try our best to do that. We try and bring people into the community. We run things like academies where we mark bugs or feature requests as more simple, so we can get people excited that they can get a patch in, and then they grow into it that way. And we also juggle what most open source projects have to do, like time zones. So we move the meetings around so that everyone gets a fair go of not having to wake up at 3 in the morning to go to a meeting. Being on this side of the world, being down in the bottom of the world, it's and not so many of us, it would be quite easy for the community to go, oh, we'll just put it. Most of the people who work on Koha in the Northern Hemisphere will just base it in those kind of time zones, and we can, who live in New Zealand, never sleep, but they don't do that. They make sure they include it for everyone. And I just see that Laura's asked me over in the chat what time it is, and at the moment it's 7:47 a.m. on Friday morning. Not so bad. My colleague Alex, who spoke the other day, was at 4:30 a.m. So I got a win in that contest. But yeah, 7:30 on a Friday morning is probably earlier than I normally start work. The next thing, I'll, next concept I want to touch on is tino rangatiratanga, or self-determination, or autonomy, or sovereignty, for want of a better word. So when we talk about that in a Te Ao Māori worldview, we often, you'll hear it in the context of New Zealand, as Māori, we assert that we still maintain sovereignty. Even though we were colonized by the British, we didn't cede our sovereignty at any point of that. But in terms of the context of a project, we're talking about it, about who has those controls over their own destiny. So for open source communities, it means questions like, can your community thrive and survive independently? And who makes the decisions? Who really makes the decisions that matter? And should bad things happen, how do you deal with that? And where does the power kind of lay? So an example, this is probably one of the not fun examples of working in Koha, but it happens, was some of you may have been aware of what I call the Libelime crisis. So in a period of between 2008 and 2011, Libelime, and then PTFS, who bought Libelime, attempted to take corporate control of Koha. So, and they even tried to trademark the word koha, which is a Māori word in New Zealand. They ultimately lost, but just the act of doing that was a very hostile move. But the way the community resisted, it wasn't just about the code. We didn't just fork the code. We didn't do anything. Like, we worked to protect our actual tino rangatira. We made sure that the infrastructure after that was never in the never centralized in a way that could be kind of taken over again. We established kohacommunity.org and maintain kind of true community sovereignty. PTFS have gone on, they've moved away from Koha. They have a product called Bibliovation now that they do. It was a fundamental misunderstanding of them of the way the community worked, and the idea that money can buy you people's subservience didn't really work with the Koha community. So it was, well, at the time, a horrible thing to be part of. I didn't like having to write affidavits for trademarks, and I didn't have to deal with screeds of emails and really angry people, mostly on the New Zealand side. It was quite amazing to see here in New Zealand, because the way it was perceived was, here was this US defense contractor company coming into New Zealand and trying to steal a Maori word. So we ended up in the national news here and everything. So it was not fun to be part of, but in hindsight, we handled that in a way that I think I'm really proud of, that we came through it with and much stronger out on the other side. So the next concept is tikka. The tikka is the act of being correct, essentially. So in this context, I'm using it to mean fairness and justice and the correct process. So not just following rules, but ensuring processes are genuinely fair and inclusive. And so good process builds trust, and bad process destroys community, even when the technical work is excellent. Kind of an example of this is another thing. So within the community, with apart from the Sublime thing, there's been zero internal legal disputes. No one has ever got to the point inside the community of really throwing their toys out of the cot, which, well, I don't know if you have that saying over there, but that's, you know, when you have a toddler that gets really angry and they throw all their toys out off the cot onto the floor. We've never had that kind of thing within the community. And I think that's because we've never had an internal governance dispute escalate to that kind of level. The Liblibe trademark was an external corporate aggression, but by having these transparent and fair processes, even the way we choose Koha Kon, it's an open, it's a transparent, it's a vote. There's no hidden things. It means that people can have confidence in the decisions that are made. We don't have kind of a secret cabal or groups working behind the scenes making decisions. It's all done within community meetings, minuted and decided upon, and nothing's written in stone. If we make a decision that we later decide wasn't the right one, we change it. We don't back ourselves into the corners and let ego override making the right decisions. The last one I'm going to talk about is pono. Pono means being sincere or authentic. So in the world of increasing marketing hype and feature inflation, being pono requires honest communication, both about the capabilities and the limitations of the software. And this builds much deeper trust than any marketing campaign. I don't know if you're as sick of me as me of some of the hype around AI and those kind of overinflated claims, and which actually backfires in a lot of ways, because it's generative AI can do some really neat things. It can't do some of the stuff it claims it can do, but it can do some really neat things. But when you overstate, you destroy trust and people don't believe anything you say. And I think the way we talk about Koha is quite honest. We don't overinflate what it can do, and we don't say that it can. Yeah, we talk about its limitations, and we talk about where we have bits to work on. An example of this is in 2015, it's not really a crisis. I just like using the word crisis to make a bullet point, makes people pay attention more. But in 2015, between June 18 and June 23, there were four security researchers working for a security company in the Netherlands who did a real deep dive into Koha's code. They were doing it as part of kind of a learning exercise to bring some interns and stuff into their security into InfoSec company. They went real deep and they found some really gnarly, what you often call chained attacks, where you had to, about four or five things had to go wrong for it to do. But if you did manage to do those four or five things, you could get privilege escalation, and so, which is quite a dangerous thing. So they were great. They contacted us on June 18. On June 19, we'd responded. On June 20, we had a patch. June 21, they tested it. June 22, we released. June 23, we was assigned some CVE numbers and released all the code out. So in 5 days, we'd solved it, and the whole process was transparent. By using the CVE numbers, it goes into the MITRE database of critical vulnerabilities. Anyone can look it up. We didn't try and paper over it. We didn't try and hide the fact. We said, look, there's the security issue here. This is how we've fixed it. Upgrade. This is the fixes there. More and more companies are doing it this way now, but people still do this kind of idea of security through obscurity, that if you don't talk about it, no one could ever find the bugs. And that's often how you end up with really messy breaches down the track. So those are kind of the kind of concepts, and I don't think anything is kind of groundbreaking. I just think it's by working with those together, create a community that is much stronger than potentially other ones. So as part of this talk, I decided, you know, what can I do as a kind of a bit of a takeaway, or a bit of a useful thing for people to perhaps have after this talk that they could use in their own work. And so I started trying to make this little framework, which is more of a like an assessment tool. So the idea with it is that across these 5 kind of concepts, you rate each of your project out of 1 to 5. And you can kind of, just by doing, it's like a fairly simple thing, you can kind of see, okay, we don't do great on Manaakitanga. We're not, you know, we're not increasing the number of developers we've had. When the poor person writing the manual was just the one person, although whatever those might be, you can kind of see which area you need to put some time and effort into to try and bring your project up to a higher level. Some kind of examples of projects that I think score in the 20 pluses, and I'm biased, obviously, but as Core has one of them. But also put FreeBSD in there. That's a 30-plus year democracy project, and it from that has grown things like macOS and iOS and stuff. From there, FreeBSD became Darwin, became OS, macOS, and Debian, which is the flavor distribution of Linux that we develop primarily for in Core, which has a constitutional government, well, democracy essentially. Everything is, they have elections, 1,000+ developers vote in those elections. They gear that, they all across here, they kind of share this genuine is the word I wanted, genuine community sovereignty, and they're actually remarkably rare in those kind of spaces. So I think it's something that in our work we can look at and try and figure out, is there scope in the projects we're working on to lift up, to be into more of that high wide, high trust, high strength, high resilience, I guess, for want of a better word, framework. And so start small. So pick one to do this week, maybe. Just chose one little thing that you could do across those 5 things to potentially grow your community's resilience or strength or bonds. Yeah, don't try to change everything at once. That never works. Pick one small value that resonates with your current challenge. So whatever you're having problems at the moment, like I said, it might be bringing newcomers in, or it might be keeping the manual up to date, or it might be there's a couple of grumpy developers that put other people off doing code. Because when they code review, it's not great. So how are you going to deal with talking to them about lifting their Manaakitanga? So we do one little bit maybe once a week, once a month. Small changes compound over time, and that's how you create genuine cultural transformation. So I need to be honest here. I don't have any rigorous comparative study that I can point to with statistics about how this kind of community is more resilient than others, but I do have evidential or qualitative stories. And what I can share is Koha's demonstrable track record, which is 25 plus years of continuous growth, over 20,000 libraries, and a community that survived corporate challenges, COVID, all sorts of the crises we face now across a lot of the Western world, with mistrust and disinformation and governments that are kind of hostile to the ideas of knowledge and open access to knowledge and funding libraries and those kind of things. Through all these challenges, the community has survived, and so I think that's kind of what I can point to. So the evidence for Wairua's importance is the sustained relationships, the crisis responses, this cultural transmission across generations. One of my colleagues, Alicia Amor here, who is the technical lead at the company I work at, Catalyst IT now, which is what I used to be, she started with us when she was 16 years old. And so we've done this kind of generational trans. We have people who have grown up with Koha and are working on Koha and stuff as well. The resistance to the Libline takeover showed the community resilience. The way we deal with security issues demonstrates transparency. But I'm not going to overstate numbers with that I can't substantiate. I can't say this is 30% more effective than something else, because to doing so would be not being puno, would be not being truthful and authentic and sincere. But I can say that I wholeheartedly believe that the strength of the community is not the code, not the formal governance. It's the community bonds. So, wherever you are in this, if you're the individual, if you're the project, if you're the ecosystem or the sector, the small changes you make have the ripple effect. If we can bring more manaakitanga, more care for each other into an open source project, perhaps that spills over into our workplace and then maybe the wider sector. I think we could all do with a bit more kindness in the world, a bit more genuine care for each other, bit more uplifting, those kind of things. So I think we have an opportunity to use these this kind of framework, for want of a better word, to see that to just make small changes, then hopefully get that ripple effect. If we're all making a little change, big things happen. Yeah. So the other thing is, like, use perhaps connect with others. There's plenty of Koha people at this conference, but there's plenty of other people working in similar, like Debian developers, other people working in these kind of community-based projects. Grow some connections there as well. Start small. Small steps compound effort. Compound effects. Man, I need more coffee before I do a presentation next time. So, kind of some questions I'd like to explore. Well, actually, I'll just, yeah, some questions I'd like to explore in my own time as well. Maybe some feedback I can get from you after this session somehow, or even if you want to pop it in the chat now. Which of these values kind of resonate with your experience, and what's one practice you thought you could potentially apply, and how might these apply beyond library technology? I'm just gonna finish off with kind of the final slide, and then I'll read back through the chat and see if anyone said anything that I'd like to talk to. And then I know we're running a bit ahead of time, but I'm willing to take some questions and stuff as well. So there we go. The whakatauki, or proverb, we use whakatauki a lot in Māori to kind of guide. There's sayings that people have said, like proverbs and stuff, in other cultures, that people have said at some point in the past. So He hara taki toa I te toa taki tahi, he toa taki tini. So the strength of my mine is my not mine alone, it's the strength of a collective. So and I think this whakatauki speaks to the heart of a sustainable open source community. No single developer, no matter how brilliant, can sustain a project like Koha for 25 years. Our strength comes from the collective, the whanaungatanga, the familial bonds, that growth of the community into a family, the manaakitanga welcome, the sovereignty, the tino rangatira tanga we exercise together, the tikka, the correct processes we build collaboratively, and the pono truth that we share honestly. And this whakatauki reminds us that in community-driven technology, we're always stronger together than apart. When I was in Nigeria for Koha Kon there, they had a saying, together I go, alone I go faster, together we go further. And I think that's another nice way of thinking about this as well. Ngā mihi nui, thank you for your attention and engagement. I know it's always harder to listen to remote presentations. I wish I could have been there in person. Travel budget does not quite stretch to... I've been overseas twice this year as well. That's the problem of living on some islands in the bottom of the world. Everywhere is a long flight. So maybe I'll see you all in person at some point another time. And that is me. Happy to take any questions or happy to let you go. And yes, Laura, I will share my slides. I'll see what else is in the chat here. Two favorite words, pono two, that's nice. Yeah, that's a good point as well about maintaining authenticity and honesty around the product's fault, but also being excited and optimistic. It's Karen Schneider used to talk about relentless optimism, and I think that's kind of a nice way to look as well, as so that you can acknowledge faults, but they're only a fault now, they're not a fault tomorrow when you fixed it. So it's all about that kind of being honest about where you are, but not deciding that's where you're going to stay. It's more that kind of like, this is where we are and we'll keep getting better. My dad always says, as long as you're doing better tomorrow than you are today, it's all good. So I think that works for most things in life as well. And I didn't hear the applause, but thank you. Thank you for letting me know, George.
The tech guy said if anybody here had any questions, that you're going to have to go up to the mic.
Chris, this is Laura here. I'll turn my camera on so I don't look like my dog.
Hi, Laura.
My dog's prettier than I am. But I really appreciated, what did you call it, time zone care.
Yeah.
I have been co-convening the Linked Open Data SIG, which is, I've been trying to honor the really international interest there. And we did a lot of experiments with rotating times, and you know, everybody gets a time that's good for them, but that means everybody also has to get a time that's bad for them.
Yep.
And it didn't stick. And I don't know if it's just because the core members really have just sort of found the 1 or 2 hours that work and that's good enough, or because I didn't do it well enough. But if you have stories about how you, I guess I hate this using socialize as a verb, and yet I feel like I'm doing it a lot lately. So I need to look for a better verb. But how do you make that become normal, the idea that in order for everybody to get the time that works, everybody also has to be willing to sometimes have the time that is painful for them.
Yeah, and I think you've just kind of nailed it. It's just talking about that idea and like acknowledging that like we're all going to have one time that we don't like. So one of the ones we do in Kohala that works quite well is we just shift it by 8 hours every time, and that works quite well. And so you kind of know where the cycle's going to be, and where if you we have agendas. So if it's a bad time and there's nothing you want to talk about, don't come. But if there's something important, you get up at whatever horrendous time it might be and come along. And you, yeah. And but when you're in the meeting too, it's acknowledging that. So if you're chairing, make sure that you're like, thank you, David. I know it's 3 in the morning. I'm really appreciative that you're here, you know? And those just little things like that can just make it people realize, oh yeah, David had to be here at 3, so I'm not complaining when I'm here at 7 the next time or whatever. So it's just little things like that seem to work. I see Jesse's said something in the chat, which I'll read out for you all. I find myself thinking hard about Manaakitanga. It's hard in a large and an established community to really feel like when they say everyone is welcome, that means you are welcome, even when it is absolutely what they mean. Any advice on, for lack of a better phrase, getting over yourself and accepting it? Yeah, it's a tricky one. Manaakitanga is an act, can't say I do Manaakitanga. You do Manaakitanga, if you know what I mean. So if it's true Manaakitanga, you should start feeling it. So even if they say it's, yeah, that's good. Just directly saying to people, I used to do it and I should start doing it again, but I used to reply to everyone who I first saw mail on the mailing list and say, welcome to the community. Simple, simple thing. And I've stopped and I should bring that back. But just a little thing like that, just like personally, you know. And so, and if you get that from one of the developers that people recognize because they've been in the community for a while, you're like, oh, you know, Chris is a busy person, but he still emailed to say welcome to the community. Maybe they actually mean it. But I think it's more important to show it as well, so that should you notice that person ask a question, and it's a question that they could look up the answer for, you don't need to say that. You just guide them towards that, and or you can ask them, did you know, where did you research or where did you get stuck that you couldn't find the answer? Like there's ways to answer people's questions without making them feel silly for asking them. And I think that's a simple, small thing you can do in that kind of Manaakitanga. Everyone, you know, you can be the best developer in the world, but if you're used to working in a certain development flow and then you switch to another one, it's going to be different and weird. And we can't just assume that all of everyone's experiences and knowledge levels are the same. So kind of, what's the saying? Never attribute not, no, that's not the wrong one. But don't, when the question seems like a silly question, it's, don't jump to the kind of like, that's a silly question response. Just welcome them in. If they answer ask the same question again and again, well, then that's a different issue. But those harder ones to deal. I often find the other thing around Manaakitanga too, which is further down the track, is that doesn't translate directly to being kind. As parents or pet owners or whatever we mean, sometimes manaaki means grabbing hold of the dog's collar so it doesn't run into a traffic, or correcting someone's behavior because it's dangerous for them and the people around them. So there's an act of Manaakitanga is not always in the moment kind, better for everyone. So some of the Manaakitanga we've had to do in Koha has been dealing with people who sometimes mean well, sometimes don't, but the way they communicate actively discourages other people in the community. And you can't to monarchy, both them and the community. You can't just let that go. I feel like I've really waffled on that answer, so I'm going to stop now. Wrathful compassion in the Buddhist thing is similar. Yep, similar. The idea of karma is kind of the same kind of idea as you know, what you put out comes back to you kind of idea. I'll have to look up the data import lab. That's cool. So Lynn says, I think we do Manaakitanga well in the data import lab. We help anyone that is having any kind of issue with the data import app and troubleshooters group. Yeah, that's a great way of doing it. A simple example of Manaakitanga in, say, a IT company is the act of peer programming or even code review, those kind of things. The ways you do that is an act of manaakitanga as well. I'm really loving that there are a bunch of people now using te reo Māori words from all around the world. Last week was Te Wiki o Te Reo, Māori Language Week in New Zealand. I don't know if you know, but it was quite an endangered language here. There were two or three generations when we weren't allowed to speak it in schools. It's lovely to see the revitalization extending beyond the shores of New Zealand. So that's pretty neat. Do we have any more questions or should we wrap it up? I've got to go catch a bus to the office and do some more work. But it is Friday.
This is George. Yep. This is George in the room again, and I asked here if anybody had any questions, and nobody does. So
okay.
It's good to see you, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, George. Yeah, good to see you as well. I won't see you at Kohakon. Are you coming to New Zealand, George? You're not, are you? No, it's a long way.
Unfortunately, I will not be going to Kohakon. I couldn't justify going to Kohakon, going to New Zealand without my wife.
Fair enough. Now that makes absolute sense. It's a long way to come. Okay, dokie. Enjoy the rest of your, you've still got another way, day to go. You've got a Friday to go. Enjoy your weekend when you get to it. Lovely to virtually see you all. As we say in Māori, ipurangi. Ipurangi is the word for internet. Containers in the sky, literally translate, which is a cool word for internet, I think. Anyway, enough te reo lessons. Enjoy the rest of your, whatever you're up to after this, conference drinks or whatever it might be. Ka kite anō.